Welcome to the ISPNIC Hot Topics Podcast, brought to you by ISPNIC. Each episode will host a short interview with key opinion leaders in PICU or NICU and other fields of medicine. Keep listening to find out more about this episode's host, guest, and featured hot topic.
Good morning again. My name is Daniele De Luca. I'm the ISPNIC Medical President, and I'm here today with Professor Maurizio Cecconi from Milan, who needs no presentation. Maurizio is a close friend of mine and is particularly the past president of the European Society for Intensive Care Medicine. And during today's podcast, I will be speaking with him about his experience, the very last years, and also the collaboration between ISPNIC and ESIC. So thank you for being here, Maurizio.
Hello, Daniele, and thank you also to ISPNIC, and hello, everyone. Very, very happy to be with you today.
Same for me. You know, we share many, many things, and I think that we had a shared path in the last years, but also I think that we have something in common because both of us, more or less of the same age, spent some years out of our country and doing a little bit of experience and then coming back, trying to exploit this experience. What is your feeling about that? This is something everyone is talking about, but from inside, from the guys that are actually doing that, it may be different, isn't it?
I think I spent about 14 years of my career in London, actually, to the extent that I still work more years in the NHS than actually in Italy. I know it sounds a bit of a cliche. Everyone says, life is a journey, but it is true that it is a journey. I never went abroad thinking I would go back, and I never, left Italy thinking, I don't want ever to go back to Italy. So it kind of just happened, and it was about, I think, for the majority of us, when you want to do research and you get passionate about it, and, I always liked clinical and research together. I just found a great place that was a St. George's Hospital, found some mentors there. David Bennett, unfortunately, is not there anymore. He died a few years ago, and then Andy Rhodes. And they took me a little bit under their wing. They saw I was very passionate about learning and doing research. I think that's a common feature that I find in people that spend times abroad. They go sometimes not even with a fixed project. They find the right people. People see their passion. You need to have a mentor for that. And then things just come along.
Yeah, you're right. It's a little bit of casuality or coincidence. But you said you're right. I guess that the mentorship is the most important part of the history, right? Having a right mentor and the other way around, being a right mentor is probably the most important thing. What do you think about that? Now you are a mentor, you're a KOL.
Completely, completely. And while you were speaking, asked me this question. And as I said, for me, I'm just mentioning a couple of very important mentors for me, but I had others. And sometimes, the mentor is not necessarily always in your field. You're just someone that really helps you to take your potential out, to give you the connections, the network. And so, and I was thinking one of the most difficult things that we had for the young generation of intensivists, adults and pediatric, I think, Daniele, in the last years of COVID, when we only had these Zoom meetings and virtual meetings, they have been okay to share knowledge, but you were missing a lot of, of the conversations that you can have sometimes to meet someone that you admire, that you want to learn from, and then you want to spend time maybe in their department and so on. So I'm happy actually that we are in a phase of the pandemic where we start to get servership back in our departments, fellowships. They are so crucial. They're so important.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. Human interactions is something that is defining us, and we have been missing that for quite a long time. And now the question about COVID was, anyway, expected. This was the experience that actually changed our life, particularly you guys working in adult ICU for forever, I would say, and in a way that probably we would never wonder about. So you have been on the first line. Northern Italy has been hit first than any other Western country. You teach it a little bit to the rest of the world. What was COVID? How it was being treated? What we should have done? I remember your podcast about that. Your webcast, and it's also a pleasure to remember that the Italian president knighted you for that, for being one of the three most important doctors in the war of COVID. So now things are a little bit more relaxed. You had time to, slow down and think about these crazy years that look like very, very far, but it's actually 2 years ago. It's not that far. What do you think about that crazy period right now? What would you recall?
It has been a crazy period, and I think for all of us. Sometimes with my team, we joke that I just came to Italy just in time to be here for the pandemic.
What's your fault?
And I basically been in this new hospital for 2 years. I was very happy with how the things pan out with my team. Really, we grew up very fast and very well together. And then the pandemic hit, and I found myself in this kind of unique position of being the president-elect of ESIC. I'm about to start my mandate in a few months. Luckily settled in my hospital, and I will never thank enough my team, because, you know, I was very involved in the clinical side of things, but at the same time, they gave me the time to be able to organize some of the podcasts and to try to share knowledge from this side. I think probably what I realize has been important in my story is what you were saying before. You know, I spent a lot of time abroad. I have a lot of friends and connection around the world. And just a few weeks before, I was in America before the pandemic started in Europe. And basically, I had the realization that no one of us really was prepared with a real concrete plan of action in any hospital in the world, you know. And we were all saying, you know, what's happening if what we are seeing in Wuhan will come to our hospital? And everyone thought, yes, we have to do something. But the preparation had not been as we would have hoped afterwards. And so when the crisis hit in Milan, I thought, of course, we just have to deal with the patients here. But we have a moral responsibility, I think, to share this knowledge as fast as possible with colleagues around the world, to give them the time that we didn't have. And, you know, we are in quite a wealthy region in Europe, and we were really in a difficult situation. So we thought, if this is happening to us, it can happen to anyone. And I think that was the trigger to try to link everyone. And it was a team effort. It was not just me. It was the Lombardy ICU network. It was really everyone. But of course, I had the links to be able to access directly very fast and very reliable media like JAMA, or like, of course, the European Society of Intensive Care Medicine, and my friend Joseph Kesechoglu, the president, basically just told me, tell me what you want to say, and we will go out with those messages. I think it started a little bit like this. I believe we've been quite fast, and I'm proud of that, to try to fight the disinformation, to fight the noise, to give simple key messages to people. So it is a crazy period, but I think I will also remember this period with a bit of pride of having been with a great group of colleagues and friends locally and around the world, with great solidarity. And this goes also to you guys in the pediatric ICUs, Daniele, because you were saying that we've been hit more than you. It is true, but that's exactly because of that. Many pediatric ICUs around the world have been helping so much during the pandemic. You know, I think it's been a crazy period, but the first few months, in a way, you kind of remember with a positive feeling of solidarity. I have the feeling we've lost a little bit of that in the second and third wave, when people were a bit more tired and so on.
I guess this is human again. So probably the best heritage from this virus is increased awareness and increased preparedness, because this is what we felt was lacking, isn't it? So that's something we should have learned right now.
Yeah. And I hope we will bring this learning forward, and also to learn that the preparation, you don't do it 2 weeks into a pandemic, but you have to do it now, or when you don't have a major healthcare crisis. And we don't know how the next healthcare crisis is going to be. Maybe it will be triggered by some bacteria that will become more resistant, as we know is already happening to some of our antimicrobials. Maybe it will be another virus. Maybe it will be something else. And we need to learn now on how to get our systems better. And I think one learning for me is being really deep. Even in our jobs, where there is so much technology, people have always been the most important part of the response. And I have the feeling we have tried, but we could have done better also to help and to protect our teams and our healthcare workers. You know, there has been a lot of burnout, as we know, a lot of people tired and sometimes leaving the jobs. I think we need to find ways in our teams to work better, but at the same time, in positions like yours or mine, we should also work with politicians and institutions to demand that there is a way also to train, to staff properly our ICUs, to retain people, to reward them, to give them value, to make sure that basically they can stay happy, you know, in the job that we love.
I guess this is very much important because, as you know, in the whole Western world, physicians are very much stressed and with a lot of responsibilities. The image of our profession is anyway changing. And, you know, we take care of our patients, but now we also have to take care about the disinformation, as you said. We have to take care of education and research. And it's a lot of things. It's a bunch of things on the someone's shoulders. So we better reward them. We better acknowledge that in order to keep people up doing all this. And in this regard, as you said, we try to give a hand as much as we can, although we have not been hit so much and we are much smaller than you guys. But to close the conversation, it's really nice to say a few words about the ethnic and ASIC together, because we've been president together and we have been doing many, many things. And personally, I loved your motto. I mean, together we are intensive care. And I would somehow consider that in a more wider way. I mean, together as a whole community, you know, neonatal and pediatric intensive care together with adults. I believe that there are many more things that actually link us than differences between us. So this is probably what pushed us to do so many things together. And what's your vision about that?
No, I completely agree, Daniele. But, you know, it is a biased vision because you and I, we work very well together. And I think we've done, you know, very good projects and collaborations. The last one, we are very happy that now you have your own journal for the community of intensive care for pediatric and neonatal. But I'm sure that we will collaborate more. We've always been learning from each other as colleagues, as healthcare workers, also as societies. You know, there has been so much learning going from pediatric and to adults and vice versa. We need to keep doing this. And, you know, we keep our competencies and the jobs are different, but there is so much in common and so much synergy when you work together. So I'm sure that there will be many more projects also with the next leaderships between the two societies.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I'm very much happy to have seen it again. And thank you for being here and to say these kind words to the VUL Ethnic community. See you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Daniele. And thank you, Ethnic. And thank you for hosting me today.
Thank you. Have a happy new year.